to have donated. I'm going to shout out to Attrax, the careers site people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to say best career sites in the world. And by the way, thank you so much for your considerable donation. So yeah, I've got, bear in mind, I started with a target of 250 quid.
Yeah, it's £2,000. I think it's well done. I mean, to be honest with you, I think Movember might have just slid away a little bit in terms of, like, people stopped talking about it, right? So I'm not sure whether it's fatigue or people have just given up or whatever. But it wasn't, it doesn't feel as big a deal as it was. So you've done great to keep going. And, you know, 2K is nothing to sneeze at, man. That's well worth having.
Thank you.
Yeah, excellent. Anyway, we're live, everybody. So welcome to Brain Food Live on Air, bringing it to you. It is episode 135. And we are like two, I think this is the third. We've got three more Brain Food Lives, including this one, before the end of the year. So we are rapidly accelerating to the end of 2021, which is like incredible to think about. So welcome and thanks for joining, everybody. As usual, we're going to do some sound checks just to make sure everyone's okay. So Crowdcast, if you're on Crowdcast and you're going to hear me okay, do let me know. Just give me a comment in there to say, yes, Hong, I can hear you. We are multicasting on LinkedIn, so we should be on LinkedIn. If you're one of my connections on LinkedIn and able to view this, confident or I endorse or support your position, one of those emojis, let me know you can hear me okay there. And I've actually pressed a button this time to manually launch this into Facebook because essentially the scheduling has just been firing off all over the place. I don't know if you noticed, but the show hasn't been going live in the Facebook group at the same time as everyone else. It's just totally off center for some reason. So I've just had to press it. And hopefully you can hear me and see me all right on Facebook as well. All right, cool. Tony Restel has said he can hear and see us, so that's all good. All right, let's get on with it. Quick shout out to our sponsors this week. New sponsor, this is a company that's been doing amazingly well. I think they've actually come back to winning kind of a recruitment new business award of the year. Join Talent, I think this is a business that has essentially been you know, tearing up trees in terms of the embedded recruiter model this year, and it's grown from like very small numbers of people to like 250 people in no time, and they are our sponsors this week, and in fact they've gone massive next year as well in terms of sponsoring. They've literally bought as much as possible on almost every channel, so you're going to see and hear a lot of Joint Talent next year. Anyway, welcome and check out Joint Talent. If you're a scaling business, you're an organization that needs some sort of recruiting support and you can't hire your own recruiters, you want to check this company out because it looks like they can supply some value to you, especially if you're sort of SMB and above, even enterprise level. That seems to be where they are finding the best home. Okay, let's
go. I don't think it was business of the year, by the way, although I think that would have been probably well earned. I think it was actually Katrina won like entrepreneur of the year, new entrepreneur of the year, something like that, in the British Business Awards. And we're going to see her on Dragon's Den soon.
I think so. I think she's absolutely going to be up there. And she's also great TV. I think if you know Katrina, yes. Katrina might actually be joining us later today. She's meant to be doing that. So I'm not sure whether she's around, but if she's here, we'll bring her on. Because it'd be good to get her view as to where we're at.
This is a working mum who's built like a really crazy fast growing company from the darkest part of Scotland.
It is, isn't it? She lives in a castle as well, constantly complaining about how cold it is. And I'm like, half the time I'm humoring her, and the other half is saying, don't live in a castle then. Do you know what I mean? Like,
drafty in a castle.
Try living in a normal house. Anyway, let's get on with the show. Adam, good to see you, man, as always. Well, let's dive straight into it. Sort of newsletter last week, did you have a chance to have a look? And if so, you know, what was interesting?
Yeah, lots of things this week. So the first I want to pay attention to was Peter Gold's interview on the Chad and Cheese podcast.
Yes.
Anybody interested in recruitment technology needs to listen to this. It's not about here's some niche trends and here's little things you need to know about so you can get 2% better. This is like essential listening. They don't all agree with each other necessarily about what's happening and what the future is. And in fact, it starts with Chad and Cheese saying that he might as well have called himself Mr. Horse and Car instead of Mr. ATS. I think that was like a suggestion that the ATS is kind of irrelevant to the recruitment tech stack today. But actually, they weren't necessarily disagreeing on anything very much. What they're saying is there's a big convergence of technologies. What we sometimes describe as an ATS is really much more of a recruitment platform, with the ATS being now just a very small module of that recruitment platform. So, you know, it's well worth listening to for what's happening right now that you might not be aware of and what is likely to be happening in the like immediate future, the next sort of 24 months.
Yeah, and if you don't know Peter Gold, by the way, he's like pretty much an industry veteran in the UK. He worked at Cornerstone On Demand for a long time, set up his own recruiting technology business really early on. He does know a huge amount about recruitment technology. He's one of those like cantankerous, cynical lads. I mean, I get on very well with Peter. So, Peter, if you're watching this, yeah, I hope you know what I mean. But he'll tell you his opinion, and he's well worth listening to in this segment. Particularly, I think you're right, as you mentioned, ATS, even those letters don't make too much sense anymore in terms of what they do. You know, it was designed initially to track an applicant. Basically, look, is this better than a spreadsheet? But these days, you need to use it for a lot more than just statically recording, you know, candidate names and yeah, contact details. It needs to be, you know, that data needs to be alive for it to be of any value to you. Anyway, speaking about ATSs, one of the most interesting parts of the What Do You Want recruiter survey is going to be the question, which is your favorite ATS, and which is what we call the deterrent ATS. So in other words, if you were to join a company and you quiz the employer what ATS that you had to use, like what ATS would cause you to actually think twice about joining that company. So we've got loads of responses on that. It's going to be very interesting for people to pay attention to, especially ATS vendors, actually. Okay.
Just quickly on that, I'm not going to name any names, but if you've got a really, really terrible ATS, all you need is a brilliant chatbot conversational AI product, because that's going to help fill in all the information on the ATS without the candidate ever touching it.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's lots of ways you can kind of make a bad ATS work. But I think some of the bigger, I mean, we all know what they are. They're basically the enterprise scale systems where it's not, where the ATS is a module on a larger product. That's where it gets a bit tricky. But it's really interesting to know which are the new kind of point solutions nominated at the top, and you know which ones are emerging and which ones are really kind of, you know, really quite negatively viewed. So anyway, more on that later. If you haven't done the survey, keep doing it. We hit 2,000 completions just today, and the aim is to get to 5,000, which I think is a stretch goal, but I believe we can do it. Give us a couple more.
Okay, so New York City has passed a bill which, if turned into law, will mean that recruitment tech products will need an annual audit for AI bias. So this is really interesting because I don't think anywhere else has done anything like this yet. But if your product claims to use artificial intelligence to make decisions about who to take forward, who's going to progress to an interview stage, or any kind of assessment, then the product that's being used is going to need to have to pass this additional test. And that's going to make things really difficult for a lot of products which claim AI to be a major feature of what they're offering, because it's very unlikely that that AI is going to pass New York City's AI bias test. So because the algorithm has been created by a human who is biased. So very exciting news.
You know what that's going to do? Laws like this are just going to basically change how technology providers are going to have to build software, because it's going to be less about recommendations, you know, or ranking candidates. It's going to be more about, We can give you information about this candidate, and then it's up to you, Mr. Recruiter or Mrs. Recruiter, to make a human decision on it. Arguably, is that a good or bad thing? I don't know, because I think it does remove a lot of potential value that a automated system or artificial intelligence might give you, even though I can totally understand why, you know, this type of law might be rolled out. I'm a skeptic of regulation generally, because I think you're going to mess it up and it's always going to be 10, 15 years behind the tech anyway. So by the time this actually turns into law, who knows what the world looks like at that point and how relevant it's going to be. But definitely keep an eye on this. But I do think companies are going to stop talking about AI. They're going to, you know, simply not use the terminology and try and get away with, you know, augmented analytics or something. You start hearing more about, you know, this is a talent intelligence tool and stuff like this, rather than it's artificial intelligence. Check out the, obviously don't, you can read the bill. It's actually in there, but the report's accessible enough. So check that link out. Okay. Give us a couple more, Adam.
Okay. So the Harvard Business Review article about the psychology of meeting overload, I think was what it was described as. I noticed in your description, Hung, you said, you know, we're all guilty of filling up our diaries, but I'm pretty sure you're one of the people in the UK or in our industry, certainly, who bats off more meetings than anybody else. I'm pretty certain that you're quite strict about your diary.
Oh yeah, I've actually blocked out like massive chunks of it where no one can book anything. it's like, yeah, but I'm not talking to you.
But this article, honestly, you read it and go, yeah, I understand that, and I can see it. And I'm actually pretty strict about meetings, what meetings I do and what happens in the meetings as well. But the first one was to do with FOMO. So one of the reasons that people attend a lot of meetings is because they just don't want to miss anything. And of course, if you've got quite a controlling type of a personality, you don't want to miss a beat. You need to know what's going on. And you want to probably try and control what everybody is saying and what's the focus of the meeting. So that was one I thought was quite interesting. Selfish urgency was the second one, I think, that was mentioned. And selfish urgency is, I want people to do things for me. I'm going to call a meeting and tell them to do it. And yeah, I can't, and I'm going to get it done faster than if I post a message on Slack or send them an email or something else. So, and they often bring in, and I see this happening all the time, they bring in like the world and his granny comes and, you know, joins this meeting for like maybe two people have got an action, but six people have been told to come to the meeting.
Yeah. You know? I mean, folks, are you familiar with what we're talking about here? Like the selfish urgency, I thought was really well described, in the sense this is the person that invokes a meeting. Suddenly, all sorts of people are involved in it. Before you know it, there's all this like busy action going on. And actually, this person, if you think about it, could have maybe solved this problem, hit him or herself, with a little bit of extra work. But suddenly, it's now a mini project that other people have to do. So this, the meeting invoker is also a master delegator. You'll notice, you know, it's like this person is pushing work at people, and it's, oh my god, what can you do? You know?
Yeah, yeah. In my experience, they've often got quite low emotional intelligence as well, because they think that everything they do is more important than what everybody else does.
I don't think that's low emotional intelligence. I think they're quite manipulative. I think they're hyper EQ and they're exploiting it. And it's up to the manager to really step on it. Problem is, it's often the manager that does this. And that's the key issue. Like, what do you do when it's the manager that's selfishly urgent? You've got your other stuff on the go. This person says, we're doing this, and suddenly you're 3 days behind because, you know, this new thing has now emerged to do this. Absolute annoyance.
I did a little work with Asda years ago in about 2006 or seven, and we put together guidelines for what should be done in meetings, how meetings should be done, communicate. It was basically a communication framework, and meetings was really important, what should get covered in it. Another one that I laughed at was meeting amnesia. So this is for, I mean, honestly, teams of morons, basically, who like they get a meeting together. It's just a talking shop. And then like 3 weeks later, someone goes, what are we doing about that, by the way? Yeah, let's have another meeting about it. And it's another meeting that's just the same as the last one. So, you know, and then nothing ever gets done, and it's meeting amnesia. And then the last one was that I thought was really interesting was the concept of pluralistic ignorance. And what that means is Like, everyone's sitting there in the meeting going, this is shit. Why am I on this meeting? But I can't really say anything because everybody else seems to want to be here. But actually, everybody's thinking the same. So,
yeah, how many eye rolls?
God, what is this?
Exactly. How many eye rolls are people doing off camera, or just the little look at each other because it's what are we doing here? This is pointless. And you got to humor the one person that seems to get loads of energy out of it. Everyone else is getting drained from it. You're thinking, what is going on? Anyway, folks, you should read this post because I think there's a very good chance that you've encountered this, or this is something that it annoys you about meetings. I think you could go far by simply distributing that document to your teams. Like, just get everyone to read it. Because I just wonder whether suddenly people might just modify their own behavior a little bit if they recognize, hang on, am I actually guilty of doing one of these things? Because we definitely need to do meetings better. Allah, I totally get you. Sometimes meetings are valuable and nice to do. But other times you talk to people that say they've gone back to back from 8 hours worth of Zoom calls or whatever, and they're thinking that has got to be a nightmare. Like, you can't tell me that's a helpful thing to try and do. Okay, one more before we get into this, Adam.
Don't know the name of the guy, but he's the CTO at a company called Volts Motors Tech.
Yes,
Volts Motors Technology. And he's a few months into the job, and he's basically written a blog, which is, this is my job description, or this is how I do my job. And it's almost a job description, but it's like warts and all. It's like, yeah, I'm working on this, it's going quite well. I'm doing these things. There's a lot of work needs done in this area. And it's really how he's going about doing his job. And I think you'd post it in the newsletter. Imagine if we could make this more ubiquitous, and it would be actually really more transparent. Recruitment would be a lot more transparent if you could see the actual warts and all. This is what the person doing the job has been doing. Because the other thing is, I asked on the Recruiting Brain Food Facebook group a couple of days ago, if you're taking a new job in talent acquisition, do you want to take over from somebody who's been doing an amazing job or somebody who's been doing a terrible job? And I knew we were going to get mixed responses to that, and we did get mixed responses to it. But if you can see, how the person really describes what they're doing, that's going to help. It might not replace a job description, but it might be really, really interesting alongside one.
I would actually urge everyone again to read this post. It's hard to reinvent a job description because it's like done so many times, right? Everyone's like, give it a go. But the reason why this one feels a bit different is because it's, as you say, it's almost like as he's doing it, he's describing the current situation, and he's also describing like what he's got to do better at, which I really liked, because he's saying, look, part of my job is to do this, and I need to improve this, this, and this. And he's just almost like using it as a self-coaching document to describe, I could get better at this part of the job. This is a key thing I need to develop. And then boom, it's a bullet point there. So rather than listing historical stuff and saying, this is the checkbox I've got to go through, he's actually describing his own experiences at the moment and how he needs to improve it. A good exercise, I think, for everyone to do. And it really gives you a rich experience to what this job's all about. Cool. All right, man. Let's get on with this topic. We're specifically talking about recruiters switching industry verticals. Now, I actually realize I don't have a lot of experience at this because I've always been in tech. I started off basically speaking to software developers, and I ended speaking to software developers. So, I probably know what industry. I've never segued off and thought, right, I'm starting to hire dental technicians or something. I'm going to do a stint hiring some lorry drivers, obviously high recruitment need. I've never done it. So it occurred to me, what are the challenges for a recruiter to switch those industry verticals? And do we have any techniques to actually accelerate that? Because I'm sure, firstly, everyone can do it, right? I don't think it's like that hard to get into a new industry. You got into one, you can get into another. The question is, how do you get faster at doing it? What's the technique to get speedier? I wonder whether you got any thoughts on this, Adam, because I don't know what you recruited when you're an agent. Do you stay in a single vertical, or did you do other things?
Oh yeah, I was so niche. I was in a team of 10 accountancy recruiters in Glasgow, and I was recruiting like newly qualified accountants between 30 and 36,000 pounds. Like, seriously, that's what it was, into industry. I mean, it was really niche.
So there's a salary range that you would be the almost the vertical on. Yeah, not a penny more, not a penny less.
Yeah, like 28 to 36 grand. It was basically newly qualified accountants coming out of big four firms and placing them into industry. That's what I did. So it was very niche. But I have diversified out of that quite a lot. I ran a sourcing business for a long time, working across many different industries. And of course, I've got lots of customers now in lots of different industries as well. But there's two. I was thinking about this earlier about what would my thoughts about this be. Two main things. The first is you got to learn the terminology. You got to learn the language of the industry or the job discipline. You got to learn what's all the different jargon mean? What does the job description mean? You got to learn all the different things that somebody does, and you got to be really quite intimate about that. And then the second is, you've got to understand the dynamics of what is going on. So is it a profession that is adapting fast? Is it dynamic? Is there a lot of regulatory change? Is there a lot of disruption? And what are the market conditions? So I think if you can learn what all the terminology is all about and learn about all the market conditions, then that's a really great start.
Yeah, I think the terminology is underrated because every industry sector has its own language and has its own terms. It has its own tools. It's often a mystery how you get there. When I posted this conversation on LinkedIn, actually, one of the best plugins, I think, for tech recruiters is a product called Glossary Tech. I don't know whether anybody's familiar with Glossary Tech, built by a friend of mine called Andriy Stetsenko. It's one of the most downloaded products ever. And it was mentioned multiple times as being super valuable. And what it does is simply allow you to hover over a term that you find in a CV, and it'll just pop out and give you a little bit of a paragraph to say, oh, this means this. And I just think that's really cool. Does that thing exist in different industries? It probably doesn't, in which case someone should go ahead and build it. That's like damn useful thing.
I have come across, companies like Daxtra, they've got very, very, detailed sort of taxonomies around what keywords mean and things like that, because, that's what their business is built on. It's built on matching. So there are companies in our industry that take this very, very seriously.
They do it, but Daxtra doesn't give you the consumer level access to that. What Glossary Tech does is literally a Chrome extension. So anybody who's a user can download the thing, install it on Chrome, and then it works across websites. And I think someone should just apply that. You should license that technology and sell it to other companies that may, whatever it might be, whatever. Yeah, well done there, Vanessa and Vance. Definitely share that. Get more downloads on it. I'll speak to Andrew the other day saying, it's a great product, but can't make any money off it. it's hard to monetize an extension. But if anything that deserves that, have a few quid being thrown that way, probably that. All right, let's get some of our friends on to do this. And I'm going to go a little bit in order this because there's a couple of recruiters a lot of us are familiar with that have actually moved different industries very recently, like within the last 3 months or so. And I just thought, these people have got like legit immediate. All right, so Christine, I can't invite you for some reason.
Just while you're doing that, one other consideration that's really obvious is there are some industries that are far, far harder to learn, some professions that are far harder to learn than others. So if I'm recruiting lorry drivers, there's not going to be an awful lot of change happening in that industry. Whereas if I'm recruiting robotic process automation specialists, I'm going to need to know an awful lot more about the technical details of what things mean. So tech is basically the hardest, in my opinion, because of the fact that it's so dynamic.
All right, I think that's a good point, and it probably is the canonical example of, how do I get into tech? I get that, but I do want to examine that to see whether it's true, because I do think that there may be other niches that are even more difficult. For instance,
parts of science, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Medical stuff, and even law. I mean, how do you even build credibility? I'm going to suddenly become a legal recruiter. How do I even do that? Okay, we have Ala Pavlova joining us. Ala, great to see you. I hope you're well.
Hey, yes, except the weather is really stormy and rainy.
When it rains in the Netherlands, you can guarantee it's also raining in the UK. I think we share the same cloud. So yes, it's not particularly pleasant here either. Okay, Ala, for the people who don't know you, can you quickly intro yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Yeah. Hey, everyone. Yes, I'm based in Amsterdam. My name is Ala. I'm a tech sourcer, mainly right now with Riot Games. Before that, I was a 360 tech recruiter and sourcer at Miro and at many other great companies. So I'm very happy to be here and answer some questions about switching, because I did switch a lot between countries and between roles itself.
Yeah, let's dive straight into that, because you have moved into like the gaming sector. And I think gaming, a lot of people outside of, you know, the gaming world would assume, oh, it's just another tech thing. But actually, it's a very specific kind of tech. And oftentimes the gaming developers, they don't casually go and do another sort of career outside of gaming. They're like pretty much into gaming. Different technology universe, different tools they're using, different constraints. And probably I see the same thing with recruiters. They tend to stay within the gaming sector. So entering gaming, coming from more of a more traditional technology platform, a sort of experience, Ala, what did you encounter as like immediately, okay, I don't know about this. This is like a little bit out of comfort zone. Were there some obvious things that emerged in the early days?
A lot of great questions that I'm trying to cover. One thing is that the change that is happening in our life is either something when we follow our passion, because I was a gamer myself for 10 years, something like that. So this way, I was already entering the industry with some knowledge. I do know what type of game exists, what platforms, and I do understand that this is the part of the game that is done by designers. This is should be done by developers that works on this particular platform. This way, you're not like, you know, entering the new industry as a very newbie. So you do carry skills from your tech sourcing, because you do understand that people, there's programming languages, there are frameworks, there should be testing, there should be design, etc. And I think one of the best things, best advice I've got when you go into very new field for yourself and start working with developers that you haven't worked before, one thing I do, I contact these people and I ask them for a quick a call with me, and I'm telling them, hey, this is how I'm going to look for you. Am I in the right place? Like, what communities you're following? Which groups you're joined? Where do you read your news, etc.? Because, yeah, it shifts you from I know everything to the like, hey, can you tell me a little bit more about like your industry? Like, where are you as a specialist hanging out? And of course, contacting other experienced recruiters who are in this field for some time. And so being like very open and saying, hey, is there any best advice? And you know, out of 10 people, one will reply and one say, yeah, sure, let's have a chat. And they will tell you what do they think about the challenges of the market? Where do they look for people? So that's other things that I experienced myself. Yeah.
All right. So two things here. Basically, you've got the... What's the word I'm looking for? You just say, ask the developers themselves, like, where is the best places? A lot of recruiters would be resistant to doing that because they're thinking, doesn't that damage my credibility? You know, I'm going to be trying to recruit this person and I need to, you know, show what I know. And actually you're saying, you know, more or less saying, look, it's okay to say you don't know and approach them this way. How do you argue the case with a person who thinks, you know what, as a recruiter, we already have low credibility. We can't afford to concede anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not comfortable to do this way, I still encourage you to do that. So you can go differently, and you can invite this person as an expert or ask expert opinion, or invite as a speaker for one of the, like, I don't know, like open events you're planning. So you can find a workaround and ask the person, hey, I saw your amazing portfolio. So are you giving any, I don't know, talks, tutorials? So this way you're going to a little bit... creative way, but you know, I only got a positive response and a lot of respect from developers to my message explaining, hey, I really want to ask your advice. I'm not trying to sell you the job. And you know what? some people really entered the interview process after we had the chat, but that was honestly not the goal. And you want to give something back, right? So you also like asking these developers to dedicate some time to you, and I'm trying to give something back to them. Like, I don't know, something that I've learned, some like advise them on their portfolio, on their profile, anything. It's vice versa.
Do you know what? I think that's a really interesting part of psychology, isn't it? Where if you're asking someone for advice, the people like to be asked for their advice. They like to be asked to be, you know, to commentate on stuff that they may be expert at. And you might surprise yourself that you get a welcoming response, even though it may feel that, you know, it's an intrusive thing. If you think about the types of conversations that candidates typically hate from recruiters, is the pitchy stuff, is the hard sell stuff, is all of that type of feeling that you get. But this is a totally different style of conversation. And if you open and honest up front, you know, maybe that's going to be, you'll get yourself much more, many more results that are far less, that might surprise you, I guess. That's really interesting.
I'm sending them the short videos as well sometimes, like saying, hey, I'm a recruiter, I'm new to this field, but I'm not new to gaming. And in gaming, you can always share the passion. Oh, I love to play StarCraft, you know? So, and people are like, oh my God, I hate StarCraft. I'm going to reply to her, play another game. So you can always find a way to connect with them.
Yeah, I tell you what, the video is not to be underrated. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean by the video, Ala?
Yeah, I use Loom, just record a very short video. You can use other tools, free and easy. You can even just hang out, just go and record a short video. I use it for three different reasons. One, for reach outs, when I'm sending absolutely random person a message that I would like to personalize as much as I can. And I'm person see me, I'm real, and sometimes hold the newspaper with the dates and just making jokes like, hey, I'm not, you know, I was not kidnapped or anything. I do it my own real. And another way I'm using it for rejections, especially when I work in the hyper growth companies, I had like hundreds of rejections to make per month. And I wanted to make them also more touchable, more personalized to people. Even if it's like, you know, just the first conversation with me, I still want to send something for my side. And the third one, yes, if I'm trying to get into something new I never tried, I'm searching for developers on YouTube, on Twitch, on Twitter, and looking if they're actually sharing anything online. And I'm using this to try to build this, you know, first step with them, asking, hey, are you open for a chat to help me out to learn about this specific work? Because In gaming, like in the tech recruitment, some roles can mean the same, but very hard to identify. Like, you know, it's so easy to make a mistake, to misread the profile. I think I would better to come clean and say, hey, I really don't want to make a mistake. How do I really see the difference? Because I'm not a developer myself. I don't have this background. But if I would have, I would probably be much efficient at my work.
You know what? I think that's just a really, really great way of talking about it from the attitude perspective. And I think you see from the chat stream there, loads of people endorsing this approach. But the video is so underused by recruiters. Loom, by the way, loom.com. Are you using Loom, folks? Let me know, because if you're not, you should be. It's free, you know, most of the time for like a 60-second video. And it's actually, I think, faster sometimes to record a Loom video than it is to construct an email. You're literally shooting a video to camera and say, hey, listen, explain what it is you're explaining. And then boom, you got a link and just send it off to people. Why would anybody, you know, not be interested in this? It's also something you can't like artificially scale up, which I think the trust thing is so important when recruiters are interacting with high demand candidates, is that they often feel, oh, it's just another automated response. It's hard to do that with Loom, may even be impossible to do with Loom, because you can basically demonstrate the customization or the personalization on every case.
Have you all got access to just doing this directly within LinkedIn's native video? You just go to a message and just click the video button, and you can just send the video message straight from the LinkedIn inbox. You might, you know what? You might not all have that. It might just be me. I don't know, but I've definitely got it.
Everyone has that, but I've seen some strange feedback as to whether it's good or bad. And there was one incident where a recruiter did send a video via LinkedIn, and it was actually it was one of those instances where the candidate thought that was an outrageous intrusion, and when doxed the guy more or less, you know, and it was like a really painful thing. I just wonder whether. I don't know. It's hard to kind of judge a little bit because it's all quite new. But I think if you're pitching hard, you've just got to make sure that it's the right type of content. It's not too long. It has a bit of humor. It's not asking too much. It's not asking for major commits. But yeah, I think video generally is a positive thing. It's not that intrusive when you think about it. You know, I think Loom gives the benefit of email, which I think is generally more of a neutral place anyway. You're not like dropping into someone's DMs, so to speak. You know, a lot of people are very defensive about this, reasonably so. You know, it's like can be feel intrusive, even though it kind of why is it? But an email is generally perceived to be a public post box. So, you know, you should be able to handle a few sort of unsolicited things in there. It's not just like a private thing. So yeah, very, very interesting. What's one thing that you've struggled with, Ala, in this new space? I mean, you've got a lot of advantages. Obviously, you've got great experience in tech. You've got some native kind of interest in the field as well. So you're interested in gaming, the lingo and stuff like that. You know, you're not completely new to it. But is there anything... that's still causing you a little bit of a stickability, a little bit of a friction right now? You've been doing Riot now for about 6 months or so, but is there anything still that kind of causes you, probably need to spend a bit more time on this?
Yes, I mean, I will be also very transparent that I always have the feeling that I have something to learn and there's other ways how I can do my job better. It's not like, you know, being seeking for perfection, but is looking for the industry standards and for the industry growth. You kind of feel that you have something else to do to improve what you do. What I mean by that, so I switched from European American industry to Chinese, so China and Singapore.
Wow, and, that's even bigger jump, yeah.
To be honest, this is one of the hardest things I ever did. And I'm still struggling to, for example, to find a way to source on WeChat because there is a language barrier. It doesn't matter how great or bad I am in sourcing. I can't use all the tools just because of that, because of the language barrier. So also some cultural specifics. So I receive very different messages like A-B tested long message. I have a very short, small response rate. If I go for like a short message, a response rate high rocketing. Also, if I change the subject to the language, for example, to Chinese language, like I write it in Mandarin, of course I use Google Translate. You know what? The response rate is 90%. It's high rocketing again, because I use the language that is, used by in the industry. I mean, you A-B test everything, and you know what? Even after 6 months, I don't feel myself confident that I can, you know, coach or advise anyone. What I know is that there are tons of communities, tons of groups, and they're still very language specific. So I still need to make my way through and first contribute to these communities by, I don't know, offering some also nice tutorials, help, speaking opportunities, CV reviews. To get there to feel more comfortable on a very new market.
Yeah, and that sense of feeling dislocated and very new to it, I think is all recruiters are familiar with that. But particularly going to different language cultures, that's super, super challenging. A part of the reason why we do a Brain Food Live tour is because we're trying to explore a little bit of this and, you know, how has it worked differently. But even in European places where if you're using a language, I do it. I mean, if you kind of just put in a single word of the native language in the subject line, you're going to get an uptick in responses from that person, even though they're 100% fluent in Russian. Yeah. So today, for instance, I sent a bunch of emails to German people, German brain fooders. I hope you're aware of this. I'm kind of bothering the Germans to say, look, can you help me with this survey? But instead of Germany, I said Deutschland on the subject line. Because I'm guessing that they're going to recognize an English language phrase, but then they see a German word in there, and maybe that's going to spark something. And perhaps they'll open up the damn email more so than otherwise. So
I always start instead of like hi, hang, I would start with guten Tag or hola or bonjour or something like that, just to break the ice a little bit.
It's an icebreaker.
Like,
yeah.
It's like a handshake.
It is, and it kind of gets you a little bit of an awareness. There's a few things that we always recognize. We recognize maps. We recognize sort of language. Sort of, we're talking about visual things that people just immediately switch onto. We recognize gender as well. So you know, things that you can speak to those personal identifiers in some way at some risk, because you might going to get it wrong. I sent it to a bunch of Germans. Guess what? Yeah, there's a couple of Portuguese people that I mislabeled as German. Not too happy with that. I get it. But you're taking a bit of a risk to do it. But overall, you're going to land on a lot more people and they're going to respond positively back. So I don't think they've invented a way in which you could put a flag emoji into the subject line. But I think once you get to the point where you can do that, that's going to be a really powerful way to get opened. Because if you can just insert a flag of your country in there and you're referring to something specific about that country, people are going to click. So anyway.
Yeah, you still have to be careful because, yeah, there are some political situations in some countries that you should know. Yeah, I would advise not to do that.
I'm mega aware of this as well. I had to change the naming of certain places and also, you know, understand where this technique wasn't applicable, because almost every country has these issues. Like even in a country like Spain, for instance, you send someone who, you know, is particularly passionate about, let's say, one of the independence movements there, maybe that would not work very well. So I totally get it. Even in UK, Adam, I mean, it's probably not as prominent, but it's probably more best expressed perhaps in Northern Ireland, that area. You can get it very badly wrong if you know, started talking about whether it's UK, Ireland, Northern Ireland, how do you exactly define that? That could be very interesting to do. So yeah, political sensitivity required. Okay, let's bring on some of our other guests here, because we've got Christine can't join us, I'm afraid, but we've got Vanessa and Katrina. I think Katrina is definitely here as well. So let's bring our two friends on here also. Keen to hear from these ladies. A couple of reasons. Not only have they transitioned to different industries, but also different like company types as well, which, you know, similar to your experience, Adam, where, you know, you have moved to a different vertical, but in addition to that, you've also constructed a new company and a new identity to have to work with. So again, what are the ways to accelerate this? There's Vanessa. Vanessa, how are you doing?
Hey, good on yourselves. Nice to see you. Great. Yeah. Ella, loved what you had to say. Brilliant.
Great to see you, Vanessa. And I know, Vanessa, this is your last thing before you go off and do your like 10-week safari.
Whoa.
So I just want to thank you for spending the final moments of work with us. So Vanessa, for the folks who don't know who you are, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Hey, everyone. How are you doing? First of all, good to be here. Thanks for having me, Hung and Adam. I'm based in Johannesburg in South Africa. I'm a global talent sourcing trainer, so I train companies all over the world. So, Hung, I haven't actually quite finished. I've got another week of training a team between Australia and North America, so early mornings and late nights coming up next week. And, the rest of the time I work as a freelance sourcer and pretty much just love what I do.
Fantastic.
So thanks for having me here.
No worries. Loads of things to explore there. And we've got Katrina here as well. Katrina, how are you doing? Good to see you. Oh, can she hear me?
Katrina?
I don't think she can hear us. We can see her. Oh, Bluetooth out. Let's see what she does.
It's the Wi-Fi in the castle.
Yeah, it is.
The walls are too thick for the Wi-Fi signal.
It is. It's probably made of granite. I mean, this is not getting through.
She needs her own ISP.
That's it. I think she'll get there. There we go. But whilst Katrina's sorting that out, let's go to you with this, Vanessa. In terms of like getting into a new vertical from scratch, like how do you go about and do that? Is there, we all know, let's talk to people, let's, you know, get educated, but we're talking about acceleration here. So if you're going to teach someone to get fast at a new vertical, what would you recommend that they do?
It's pretty much what I do all the time when I'm training, you know, different companies to source. And I was enjoying your conversation about, you know, sourcing is a methodology. So if you can implement the methodology, you A for a way. You just need to learn the different terminologies across different industries. So for me, the key things are, you know, as you said, yeah, research, but it's also thinking out of the box. You know, not everyone sits on LinkedIn. And I think that that's where a lot of people go wrong, is that, you know, go and hang out where these people hang out. So as Ella referred to, you know, go and, where do you read your news? Where do you post your code? You know, where do you go and get certified? I think that these are all questions which we seem to forget to ask and just assume that everyone's going to be on LinkedIn, because recruiters live on there 24/7. So my best advice is always around community building. And when I do the training and I show people that there's already Facebook groups or LinkedIn groups or meetup groups, they kind of think, I think the thinking is that, oh, we're too late. Someone's beaten me to it. But my thinking around that is, create another group, create a different community, and do it better. You know,
yeah. Vanessa, let me interrupt you, because I think that's a really important point to sit on. Basically, go to where these people, whatever vertical is, wherever they hang out, there will be some place that they talk about their stuff. Go and hang out there. And we're focused on developers, but it could really be anybody if you think about it. I mean, if you're a delivery rider or something, you know, chances are there's a group of people that talk about this and they think, you know, how do we get better at this, or what kind of things they need to learn about. These groups exist, and obviously there might be a gate, but if there's a way in which you can get into some of these spaces, go and sit there, even if you're just like lurking and just absorbing all of that information. It's going to help you just get more comfortable with how people talk and what the major topic areas are, what the challenges are, and stuff like this. So all of it is super important. Katrina, I think you can hear us okay now. We don't have audio for you though, my dear.
Maybe you muted her just in case, or not?
Oh yeah, I do that by default. You know, Katrina's on.
I'm your technical support. Okay.
No, there's no mute. She's on, but I think that we're having some audio problems. Katrina, I don't know what to say. Maybe you can fiddle around with something. Maybe refresh and come back. But we'll continue the conversation here. We've got a few good ideas in terms of accelerating your knowledge in the vertical. What about sort of when you're having conversations with the candidates themselves? So you're having a qualification call, for instance. What sort of questions do you think we should be asking, not only to qualify the candidate, but in order to educate ourselves better about the industry? Have you got any thoughts on this?
My biggest thought around this, Hang, is just to be a human being and to be vulnerable. You know, I always say to people when I'm training is that, you know, if I'm training people to source tech, is that you don't need to be able to code. Don't pretend that you know how to code either, because that's going to be hugely embarrassing, you know, when the conversation does go a little bit deeper. So for me, it's always about, you know, approaching them with I have this role. I'd like to ask you a couple of questions. How can you educate me? And then ask things about, you know, what are the conferences in your space? What would the hashtags be? Who do you really admire and why do you admire them? Because I think a lot about getting better is to follow those thought leaders, you know, connect with them. I think a lot of people look at these thought leaders and think that they're sitting up there on a pedestal and they don't have time for you. But I mean, that's essentially how I learned to source sitting here in South Africa, because 6-7 years ago, there were no sources in Africa. And I had to connect with, you know, the Balashes of the world and Shane McCuskers and Bill Bormans and yourself, and just say, hey, I need help. And everyone was so willing to help. And I found that when you find these industry leaders and people running communities, they want us to do better. As a recruitment industry. So they're more than willing to assist us. And I think that that's something key that people forget too.
Okay, so there's a fourth point. Basically, don't underestimate the relationships you have with other recruiters, particularly these online spaces. I would imagine, and I hope, that most people who are watching this show probably belong to loads of communities. I think you do. I mean, let me know if you do or not. But if you're kind of just touching your toe in, I just recommend you push your foot in, you know what I mean? Get in to these communities, because it does give you just a richer sense of who's around. The information flow is going to be better, and you're simply going to get some, you know, passive kind of education. You don't even have to work that hard to get to that that level of knowledge. So, you know, all very, I think, simple and doable. But again, you think about the numbers of recruiters on the planet. There's 2 million recruiters plus. How many of them are really involved in online community? Probably less than 2%, maybe 5%, something like this.
I've actually just posted, I reckon 20%.
20%?
That might be too high. I don't know.
I think it's too high.
Definitely not more than that.
it's way too high. I think the vast majority of recruiters aren't involved or engaged in this way. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're not interested in the job. I spent 10 years in this industry and I wasn't involved in any communities. I wasn't thinking like this at all. I was like purely focused on, you know, my own stuff, whatnot. Totally not having any peer-to-peer connections. 10 years I was doing that. So I would imagine
that the way you recruit has changed, I think, Hung. I think you could do that previously, but now you actually can't. You almost need to go on bended knee to the communities, not be that recruiter who goes in with a hard sell every single time you get together, but actually be a friend. How I got so involved in the South African tech community was I'd go and present at every community event, but I wouldn't present about coding because I obviously couldn't. I would train these guys on how to interview better, where they need to stand out online, how to put a CV together. And, you know, over years, I've earned everyone's trust. So it's great.
Do you know what? That's actually something Alan mentioned as well. Katrina, feel free to say something if because I want to see whether the audio.
I was going to say, can you guys hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
Finally. I ditched the AirPods. The AirPods are in the bin.
Yeah, no good. Bluetooth is always dodgy, you know, always dodgy. But great to see you, Katrina. For the folks who don't know you, can you quickly intro yourself? What it is you do? I think they all know you by now. You're like a business famous person, aren't you?
They'll work for you.
Adam. Oh yeah, I'm working on it, Adam. So I'm Katrina, former in-house TA leader, turned dark side, vendor side, now running Joint Talent. So we, as you mentioned earlier, do embedded RPO, and we also do consultancy, and lots of exciting things going on. So thanks for having me on, and good to see you guys. I've not seen you for ages, Adam.
No, I know. One of the questions I had for you was, because you've hired so many people, a lot of those people have probably, you put them into roles, into companies where they are doing things that they maybe have not had previous expertise in. And a lot of recruiters that you hire, they're probably adaptable human beings. That's probably one of the main skills. But interested to know what your thoughts are about that, because you've hired so many people in the last 2 years.
Yeah, so it's a really good question. We've got, by necessity, really high standards at the front door for recruitment. To be honest, on technical skills and on culture fit as well, because it's that culture and behavioural bit, that can-do attitude that's really important. But we've invested a lot of time in training. And as Vanessa knows, because she is one of our trainers. They love you as well, Vanessa. So we've actually created with Stuart and with Lee Harding and with Vanessa certified sourcer and now certified recruiter training, so that we can actually get everybody singing off the same hymn sheet, because nobody ever teaches you how to be a recruiter, right? No one ever taught me how to do it. I'm sure no one ever taught you, and it's really useful. One of the things, though, and I find this quite a lot, is we hire really good people. Sometimes they haven't come from exactly the same niche of an industry. We train them well, we support them well, we put them into a company and they smash it. But yet that same person, if they'd applied for a job in that company as a recruiter, they probably wouldn't even have got an interview.
Yeah.
I'm not naming names for obvious reasons, but we've got one client as an example where one of our team members is consistently either number one or two in their rankings for performance for recruiters. I know that person wouldn't even have got an interview with that client if they'd applied for a job there. And I think there's something to be said for our industry about that whole opening your mind a little bit and looking beyond the CV and looking at the experience, the capability, the attitude, the culture fit, and then actually investing in training your recruiters when they come in, even if they've got 10 years of experience in their CV, indoctrinating them into your way of doing things.
I think that's proven in terms of, you can even look at the Brainfood Jobs job board on this, because it's very evident that the jobs that go on there, they're still saying, yeah, we need 5 years experience in this, the pre-built experience. I think that fundamentally, that's a lack of confidence in your training capability. And it's a fundamental lack of confidence in the adaptability of the people coming through. So
For my favorite thing, you need a master's degree to do recruitment. I'm still seeing that coming up.
I'd like to see that advert, actually.
Ridiculous.
Can I just ask, sorry, Katrina, can I also ask, you talked about culture fit. Presumably, your organization is conveying a distinct experience for, you know, for joint talent. So culture fit with joint talent is presumably the only thing that matters. Culture fit with your customer probably matters far, maybe not the only thing, probably matters far less.
It's kind of funny because not, yes and no, like part of our culture fit is that adaptability. You know, for us, it's people who are adaptable, who are smart, who are able to, like you should do in any good business relationship, adapt your personal style and approach to the stakeholders you're working with. Somebody who is very monochrome in their approach and unable to flex their style and their approach, or just doesn't have that capability, they're probably not a good fit for us because they won't be able to adapt to our clients' culture. But there's a whole separate chat on that, Adam, definitely, about the, when you're working in a services business and you're working on client projects, how do you build and maintain a strong culture and an identity for you as a company and for your team and somewhere that they can be proud of, versus also having to adapt seamlessly on a white label basis into your clients? But that's a whole separate conversation, I think.
That's a good topic for a Brain Food Live, definitely, because it's relevant for companies that are doing that representative work, you know, because you've got your own culture as an employer, but you're on site or you're kind of effectively on site with a customer. You've got to obviously be integrated in that culture also. Like, how do you even play that thing? So I think that's definitely a topic we can chalk off, stick it in for 2022. That's a good one to review. Okay, let's kind of have an overview of this. You've got loads of recruiters, I think, are probably trying to migrate into high demand spaces. I mean, we can just track where sort of the various sectors of the economy might be. We know that hospitality, retail, all those places are really, really going to be in big trouble. Then you have other industries, green tech, personal healthcare, technology always booming. You're going to get a lot of people transferring through, right? A lot of recruiters are going to try and knock on the door. What would your advice be in terms of how they should negotiate their way through? Because they may well be encountering some of this, you haven't got the industry experience type of chat. What would your advice be to recruiters who kind of sitting there in a a moribund sector and they want to move out into a buoyant sector? What would that be? Let's go to you with this, Ala. Firstly, we'll go around.
Sure. There should be a reason why you would like to go to this new sector. Let's say, as I made an example with me, I was playing computer games, so I wanted to go there. Yesterday, I've tried to look for technical sources in healthcare industry. I found 8 people in my network, 8 people. I was so surprised, like, oh my God, so little. And it also gives me an idea, okay, so maybe the shortage in there is going to be something interesting to tackle in the future. So my actual advice that I follow myself is to stick with the people that you're looking for. If you would like to go to a new industry, for example, in healthcare, so try to set up some calls with people who are already doing this job, like specialists, try to read the articles, try to be in these communities, join their Slack groups, Discord groups, Facebook groups, and so just to get a little bit of a keywording, problems they discuss. It's the scary thing is at the beginning that it's too much of information, but like this with everything, remember you start learning a new language, it's all going to be like, you know, zero and you're building your way. So same for me, feeling new industry, new language, what are the alphabets? And then I go and develop myself more and more. And I know I need to finish one thing.
Okay, go ahead.
Recently I did deliver, a workshop for developers for OneHack community. So you know them very well. OneHack developers. And I was showing them, I shared my screen and I showed them how I look for them. I showed them how I do that on LinkedIn, how I do that on GitHub, how I do that on Stack Overflow. I received 2,000 questions. And I came back to Vanhack saying, okay, they were surprised. Developers were surprised the way how we operate. And that also makes me think, okay, so maybe I should more often showing them the way I work and they can give you like a lot of thoughts. Yeah.
Okay, that's a really good idea. So 2 points you've made there, Ale, which I want to just underline. Number one, it's always going to feel overwhelming. So if you're going to go into a new industry sector, it's going to feel overwhelming. Don't think that that's a problem. That's just very normal. You just got to keep the information flowing through you because it's like immersive learning. You're never going to feel in control of it. And then suddenly it will click like 3 months down the line. It'll the stuff that you heard 3 months ago, it'll suddenly make sense. And the second thing you said was show the candidate population what you're doing. You know, you might be surprised that they may be interested in this, but it's a great way to start a conversation with the community you want to learn from anyway. You show them what you're doing and then get their feedback on that. Don't be afraid or think it's some sort of like stealth thing that we're doing. It's not that bloody confusing, but from the outside, it may be a bit mysterious. Okay, moving around the table. Before we do that, Adam, you got to go. See you later, mate. Good Cheers. Luck with next week, whatever's happening. Apparently, he's got some sort of surprise for us, which terrifies me. You know, Ooh. He says, yeah. Whenever Adam says, yeah, next week, there's going to be a surprise on screen. No, I don't want this. Don't do that. You know, it's terrifying. Okay, so folks, we always kind of try and continue the conversation after the show. Sorry, we're going to have to close the show down soon. So before I do that, please share your LinkedIn in the chat stream. If you're interested in this topic, you want to learn about how to get faster at transitioning into different industry sectors, go and connect with the people that you see on the chat stream there. Everyone here is interested in topics, so it should be a good opportunity for you to continue the chat outside of Brain Food Live. So take a moment and put your LinkedIn into the chat stream there, folks. Okay, yeah, he's just he's not giving me any indication of what's happening next week. Exciting. So with regards to the same question, go to you on this, Vanessa. When it comes down to things like you know, advice to someone who's making this transition, what would you say to that person? You know, they're not happy with the current industry. They want to move to another one.
So I actually don't know if I'm the best example of this myself, because I spent almost 10 years being head of talent acquisition for a tech company and ignored all of the recruiters and then launched my own business where now I want to train recruiters and I didn't have a network. So that was mistake number one coming from myself. So, you know, what I like to do is be a lot more accepting now is that, you know, tap into lots of different communities, because for me, sourcing is a methodology. I mean, I've been working on loads of different roles, but what I'm seeing in particular at the moment is a lot of people contacting me and saying, Van, I want to transition and I want to become a tech sourcer, or I want to get better at sourcing tech talent. And for me, I think that's following market trends, because there's a lot of people out there looking for tech sources and tech recruiters and are paying a bucket load of money for these skills. So for me, in this, the best advice would be is going back to what I said earlier is you first of all have to have a bit of a passion for it. Like Anna said, you know, she is a gamer. She recruits in the gaming industry. I've always been a little bit of a geek when it comes to tech, and I enjoy that side of things. But for me, if you don't have a passion for what you're recruiting in, your job is going to be 10 times harder. So please don't just go into tech recruitment because you think you're going to make a shed load of cash. I mean, really, that's not the right reason to do it. Because it is, I firmly believe this, and I say it often in my training, sourcing tech is actually easier because it doesn't matter if a developer pitches up for his interview in his pajamas, he might not have showered for a few days, he's normally going to get the job, where, you know, somebody else might have a bit of an
You're talking about recruiters there, aren't you?
No, that's just developers, just not recruiters. So for me, I do find the tech sourcing easier, but you have to have a passion for it, because if you cannot have that high level conversation and tech with the client to instill, you know, their confidence in you and with the candidates, you're wasting your time. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. And for me, to finish off, the one big thing that you need to have is curiosity. To be a successful sourcer or recruiter, you need to be curious about the industry that you're working in, and you need to spend time going out there learning more about it.
Do you know what? That's amazing, Van. But I want just to follow up on what you're saying. I think curiosity is something that can be cultivated. The fact of the matter is, like, there's lots of work that is, like, really, really interesting. Even stuff that feels like mundane stuff, you just got to scratch underneath the surface of it. And you realize, wow, I didn't even know that these little techniques existed. Like, I've got addicted to watching, like, construction TikToks, where it's literally this is laying bricks. This dude just lays bricks all the time. You think, why is that interesting? You know, he's laying bricks, but there's all kinds of weird techniques as to how you do it properly, or here's how you point, how you do this.
So hang on that note, the client that you've recently introduced me to, I can't say much about because I'm under an NDA, their roles are so fascinating that it has reignited my love for sourcing in different industries. Like, it's amazing what I'm sourcing for. Like, I never knew these people existed.
That's it. People are involved in this. Right. It's interesting. You just got to scratch the surface of it and just be curious as to what this is. How do you get good at this? Like, what's the difference between a person who's good at this job compared? Could be one of the basic jobs. Wait staff, for instance. What's the difference between a good waiter and a bad waiter? Like, can you figure this out? That's how, suddenly you put that lens on, and every time you go to a restaurant, you start looking at that and think, oh, that's actually something that's a lot deeper than you might experience. Okay, let's go to you, Katrina. Final word on it. You probably encounter this a lot simply by growing a business. People who want in onto this, exciting growth businesses and so on, they don't have the experience prior to. How would you kind of advise them prior to you getting involved with joint talent training? But how would you advise them to actually better equip themselves to be better candidates when they're trying to make this transition?
Yeah, so for me, it's very much about the horizontals, not the verticals. I care more about the, not necessarily the sector of the companies that somebody's worked in. So have they worked in gaming, or have they worked in retail, or have they worked in finance? I care about the type of roles they've been recruiting for. So if you want to get into to tech recruitment and you're in a company at the minute, maybe pick up some tech roles as part of your vacancy stack, right? If you're a huge one at the minute is GTM. Like, honestly, a year ago, I think we had one GTM recruiter in our team go to market, so sales and marketing recruitment. Today, it's barely second to tech, product, and digital. I think we've probably got about 50 or 60 GTM recruiters today. And when people say to me, can I get a GTM recruiter? I'm like, they didn't exist, right? Like 12 months ago, nobody called themselves a GTM recruiter. And now it's a thing all of a sudden. And you can rebrand yourself that way. So Vanessa does a really good session on this, but really look at how you're branding your LinkedIn. We sometimes have to do a lot of work with people when they join us at actually getting their LinkedIn page to reflect their capability and their experience, because they've not done a great job of that and they're not presenting themselves well to candidates. Look at what you can do in your current role today to pick up other vacancies. And exactly what Vanessa and Ella have said, show curiosity, show that you're innovating, that you're trying new approaches, you're trying new tools, new techniques, you're hunting for candidates in different places. You're showing a data mindset in terms of looking at, as Alice said previously, your A-B testing of approaches. You're able to talk knowledgeably in your interview about why you've taken one action over the other. That's what every TA leader is looking for when they're hiring.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's another thing I think we should do is a separate BrainFuel Live as well. Like, because there's a few recruiters that have struggled actually in a tough market, in what should be a very easy market in terms of converting opportunities. I know a few people that have struggled to convert, and it's like, okay, you know, why is that? And is there a way, is there a consistent thing that they're doing that's causing this to happen? It might be useful to expose what that would be, because it's probably a pretty basic mistake sometimes. And on the online profiles, I think you're right. Recruiters kind of neglect how they appear themselves.
too much.
Even though we log into LinkedIn every single day, I mean, there's not a single recruiter that hasn't logged in today. Guarantee you, if you say you have, you're lying to me. Don't lie to me. You definitely have logged in. But you, when's the last time you edited your profile? I can tell you, I've edited my profile for at least a year. So for sure, you forget about it. You box it off. But then is it up to date? Does it actually reflect your current concerns? Are you still talking about a headline that was relevant to two jobs ago, but you've kept it in there? You know, because you didn't think actually I'm communicating something there. So yeah,
maybe my favorite comments around that in my training is, do you still have a profile picture from 20 years ago or from 20 kilograms ago?
Oh my goodness.
Because it's true. Some people don't even
we've definitely got that in our team, Vanessa. Some people with our favorite, and we take the mickey out of them, our favorite pictures. But if you can get your picture looking so hitch that it's actually cool, then that's okay. So if you've got like one of you sitting with your feet up talking on a mobile phone, that's acceptable because it's so kitsch that it's cool.
It's a difficult line to draw. Again, yet another Brain Food Live. How do you do a good picture? I have to confess, the picture I've got of me is literally, it's probably coming up to 10 years now, at least. So that's an old photo. But I struggle to change it. I don't know why. I'm kind of emotionally invested in that black and white picture.
It's the one from your Tinder profile, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, I had a great run of form. It was amazing. I need to keep it for LinkedIn and everything else. So you're all here. On that note, I think we have no worries. On that note, we have to end the show because it's been running over time as usual. I think we need to reset the expectations. We're going to really talk at the 70-80 minute mark. But thanks everybody for joining us. It's been great to see everybody. So we'll say goodbye to everyone here. Ala, great to see you. Thanks for joining the show. Have a very good weekend in rainy Amsterdam. I'll say goodbye to Vanessa as well. Vanessa, enjoy your last week at work. And then, you know,
thank you so much.
Follow Vanessa's Instagram, by the way, because it's like like literally National Geographic level photography on these amazing wildlife that you see in South Africa.
Oh, let me put it in correctly. I have a new camera now, so they're going to be even better.
Oh my goodness! I'm not sure I could wait for this to happen. So great to see you, Vanessa. Enjoy your break, and we'll catch
you
soon.
Thank you for having me. Nice to see you, Kat. Cheers, hun.
Take care. And Katrina, great to join us and well done on getting through the early tech issues. But we'll chat soon. I mean, lots of things to talk about. Obviously, you've had a cool trip out of South Africa. You've had great business success and all kinds of things.
Track and trace aren't very happy about that right now, hon.
No, I think so. You managed to escape just in the nick of time, didn't you?
I know. We've all been chased down and hunted down. We've all three of us that were in South Africa last week have had to go for PCR test today and go into isolation again.
Yeah, I think so. It looks like I think it's obviously we have to prep ourselves mentally for another lockdown. So that's something we have to do. But Katrina, I hope you're well and that you're going to get over all of this and enjoy a nice book while you're in lockdown or whatever. And we'll talk to you soon.
Cheers. Thank you.
Cool. Wasn't that great, guys? Okay, that's about it for me. We're coming to the end of the year for Brain Food Live. Next week, we're going to be talking about employer branding and talent attraction for controversial brands. Have you ever worked for a company that people have a prejudgment on? Or have you worked for a company that's happened to be in the headlines in a negative way and suddenly every conversation you're having with candidates is, oh, you know, why are you working for this company? We are going to be trying to figure out this very interesting challenge, recruiting challenge. How do you go ahead and do that? So we've got some people with great experience who work for different industries, different companies that have had that moment, or maybe you're in a sector that isn't currently a cool sector to be in. How do we actually do EB and TA when the brand is like clashing with the zeitgeist? So make sure you register for that. Follow the channel if you enjoy this type of talk, and you have a very good weekend. Thanks everyone for watching.